joining me in the studio is presenter, podcaster, woo, monolith of a man,
yeah,
Marcus Bronzy. Hello, mate.
How you doing, Joe? You're right.
I'm good, thank you, mate. How are you?
Amazed by the stories that you have put to us today. Greatness and also great evil as well, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Dark day, murder, Nazis, and a bit of making cars.
Yeah, yeah. To lighten your day up a little bit.
You're a presenter, obviously, and radio and TV, but you're also a podcaster.
Yep.
And you are the man behind How to Kill an Hour.
Yes.
Which is, I suppose, it's like a chat and it's kind of an entertainment podcast, but it's fundamentally a technology podcast.
So How to Kill an Hour is a show in which we explore different ways to kill time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's less than an hour, sometimes it's more than an hour. And if I'm honest with you, Joe, the actual idea started off as an animation.
Okay.
So we wanted to create an animation which spoke about technology, mm-hmm, but as well as that, picked up the sort of the highlights of conversation. And while we were piloting the show and cutting bits for animation, there are a couple of animations, okay, for How to Kill an Hour. We ended up with hours and hours of rushes of like plain audio of conversation. And I was like, oh, if we direct this and, you know, put a bit of a twist of maybe tech and gadgets in it, then we could end up with a nice bit of long form audio. Where do we put it? Podcasts seem to be doing well at the moment. Let's make a podcast out of it. Yeah, then we sort of decided to put the tech twist on it because I'm into tech. I think everything I do really that has a sort of... A twist to it.
It usually comes back to technology.
CBBC stuff that I do, to techie. Even when I was in radio, I was always doing like games features and stuff like that. So tech was the kind of natural progression. We started off messing with apps and little other ways of killing time. And then we got a few games and then we got consoles. And then now we're sort of, as well as tech, we're killing time by going out of the studio and trying things for days out. You know, like we've just done an escape room.
Yeah,
you've
been doing some mad stuff recently, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like we've done escape rooms. We've been sent a computer game which you control with your emotions. So you've got to out calm somebody. We've recently been sent some underpants called Ellie Trunks, which have a special string in them in your waistband, which when you pull on it helps you to adjust your manhood. Because we're men, Joe, obviously.
It happened to me today. I was walking through London Bridge Station and that basically I'd been to the loo and I'd replaced the boys in a haphazard manner, right? So it was uncomfortable. So your only option is I've got discomfort as I walk to the studio, or I'm down there, down to the wrist.
Yeah.
Like, and for me, obviously, reaching down to the knee.
Oh, naturally, Joe. Like, I mean, just so you know, Joe's wearing some slim fit jeans at the moment, and there is full profile in the studio. And I must say, even though we're in the single numbers outside of the studio, it's quite cold at the moment.
Mm.
I would think that Joe's probably in quite a warm climate by the looks of things. Right? I'm impressed, Joe.
Yeah,
what a man.
Looks like an elephant standing behind me putting his drink.
It looks like a baby holding an apple.
That's exactly what it looks like. But yeah, happened to me today. So what? So you pull a drawstring and it sorts the lads out?
Yes, there's a string and you pull and it readjusts your manhood. So, I mean, there's two benefits to it. One, you know, we can quickly adjust our manhood. And two, it keeps the gentlemanly vibe around us, which, you know, because we're gentlemen, Joe. Mm. I mean, we might have a bit of crass conversation, but I don't want to be seen digging out my crotch in public.
No.
So pulling a little string is the one. So we get sent stuff like that. And all sorts, really. I think our main mission statement is to show the listener, every single episode, a new way to kill time.
Mm-hmm.
So every episode you listen to, you take that away. And also, we have a bit of a laugh of it. We've joined by our regular presenters, Ace from BBC Radio 1 Extra, Nick Bright from the same station, Funk Butcher, part of Kiss, and Dev from Radio 1. He's one of our regular contributors. And maybe you should come along as well, Joe.
I would love to come on.
I'd love to have you on the show.
Get me on. How to Kill an Hour, though. Yeah, and you've got great people on there who are normally associated with music, doing tech stuff. You do so much interesting, exciting stuff. And because you're a tech expert, so this is a nice professional segue that I'm about to do now.
Nice.
Story number two, we did Henry Ford and the assembly line. Technology throughout history. How much do you think, as someone now, obviously the tech that you deal with every day is high-end stuff.
Yeah.
How much do you think someone like Henry Ford speeding up that process, how much do you think it affected what we see today?
I think Henry Ford is responsible for the kind of entrepreneur that you see nowadays.
Okay.
The person that can build a process and off that process create something very quickly, mm-hmm, and also expand not just in your local area, if there are the resources worldwide, you can just take that same blueprint, in Henry Ford's case, creating a product. 100 hours on a car, was it?
They were making 100 in an hour, then they made 1,000 in an hour. 93 minutes to make one car. So obviously with all his employees together, that was 1,000 in an hour.
Reading it said 12 hours it used to take before.
Took him 12 hours, then he got into an hour and a half.
So to do that is an amazing thing. And I think if you look at brands that have really been successful over the years, let's use McDonald's, for example. They took that production line process, but used it on food.
Yep.
You know, but Ford stands out as somebody that not only done it quickly, but there was quality in the product that he made. Like, Ford is a very well-known brand. And I'm not disrespecting you, McDonald's, but, you know, my mum can make a better burger. I think you or I can make a better burger. But in terms of convenience, McDonald's is the one. But Henry Ford, I mean, the fact that he didn't really give you as many options.
You can have it in any color you want as long as it's black.
I love that saying. And that kind of who else did that? I mean, I feel like Steve Jobs was very much like that with the iPhone. Look at that phone compared to an Android phone, where you can change loads of stuff with the phone. You can really get in there and mess with the phone settings. But the first three iPhones, you couldn't even change the backdrop. It was black, that was it. So I feel like he really set the standard for automation and in technology and entrepreneurship. Automation is the key. It's still a big key for people that want to make it.
What Apple did as well, which is clever, and it's the same as Henry Ford did, if you make everything straightforward for people, most people aren't experts, and they're not experts in industry or in car manufacturing or whatever, and your phone junkie is probably not always going to get the latest iPhone. They're going to have a very specific handset that they want for whatever reasons, and the same is your car junkie is not always going to get a mass-produced car. But most people aren't like that. They want whatever's simple and what's convenient. And the reason you've got an iPhone, which is essentially more powerful than the computers that you or I had growing up, and yet my mum can still use it, is because it's so simple. And I think that's what Ford did. He didn't, as you say, he didn't make a rubbish product. He had all standard parts so that anybody, you or I in a factory, could just plug those parts in, and it was really simple to make. And I think that was what he did that was so clever, and we're still seeing that today.
You know, Henry Ford dared to just say, we can do it. So it's the V8 engine was another thing where he was like, I want to put 8 cylinders in an enclosed engine. And for ages, all the professionals around him said, yeah, can't be done, can't be done. And if we could, it would be way too hard to replicate. And Henry Ford was the sort of gentleman to say, sit in a room. When you find the answer, get back to me. Until then, keep at it. And you know, he you know, the V8 engine today now is still a massive
it's a standard engine,
a very reliable engine. So Henry Ford is, I dare to say, he's one of the guys that's helped to elevate technology and also get out to the masses through his automation process.
One of the things I want to ask you, because this is something I've been thinking about a lot recently, is the future of technology. Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk as well, the entrepreneur, have both said that humanity's next great war will be with robots, will be with computers. I mean, what do you think about that? The whole AI thing, it absolutely fascinates me.
There's a few different angles on it, Joe. So there's a set of people that watch Terminator.
That's what I think, Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Yep, Skynet. Some days I feel like that. Some days I'm on the Skynet side of things, where I'm like, oh my gosh, is a giant robot going to say to me one day, hey, Marcus, I think you've had enough to drink. In fact, I think you've had enough outside time. Time to go inside. And there's obviously people that are a bit more far-fetched with the Matrix sorts of theories, like, have we already been dominated by robots? And then there are people who would say, we're always going to have control. There were people that said, oh, there's going to be no jobs. When computers are in every single office, no one's going to have a job. Computers are in every single office in the world right now, pretty much. There are still loads of jobs. And I always feel like there's going to be somebody who needs to fix the robot that fixes the robots. And if everything breaks down, there'll always be somebody there. I mean, it's a case of us being sensible, because if you do give a robot or some AI all of the information in the world, and they do have some sort of conscience, and they can see what we as the human race are doing to the world, I'd probably lock us all up.
But that's the interesting thing, isn't it? And that's what happens in iRobot.
Yeah.
It's the Alan Turing's conventions that he put forward. A robot must protect human life. So what they had do in iRobot, which is a documentary, is
real. It's 100% real.
Will Smith. Yeah, that happened to him.
In the future.
Amazing guy. What they say is that basically humanity, in order to protect us from ourselves, they enslave us. You're right, that is the logical conclusion, because we're stupid and destructive and rash. As long as the robots looked after us and went, here's your food, here's where you live, I actually wouldn't mind.
I don't think they're going to be giving you a 5-star experience, Joe.
That's true.
If you're locked up in a robot camp, I don't think it's going to be the one for you. Yeah, it's always an interesting thought. I mean, I think that if we control our development of AI, then we'll be fine. Mm-hmm. If somebody decides to unleash a beast that has access to... this is another thing that's going to be very important. We're now moving into the... Like, the hot thing for 2017 is going to be home automation, if it's not already.
So, like, the Echo, Amazon Echo.
Yeah, like the Amazon Echo or Cortana or just to break it down for your listener, you know, Siri. Mm-hmm. But imagine Siri can control your house. This is going to be the thing. And there's many devices now that mean that you could buy a wireless kettle from one shop. You can buy a wireless toaster from another shop, a wireless coffee machine from another shop. And have them all connected, and then have them connected to your, and then have your thermostat connected in your house to your home automation device. Then have your locks in your house, and then have your car connected as well. Now, if you have all of those things connected, there's a chance for a person to hack it. But if a computer decides that you're not going out today and you're not going to have any lights, electricity, or hot coffee, then then they're in control. So yeah, that potentially could happen. And we were looking at a device called the Nvidia Shield, the second generation. And all it is I'm not going to get into it too much, but all it is a device that, among other things, is a great hub for automation in your house. Okay. So while that's a great thing, I'd love to get up in the morning and say morning mode, and then everything's done. If somebody hacks it or a computer hacks it, we could be imprisoned. Who knows?
But that's incredible. So you think potentially I could get up in the morning, I could go, morning, Watson, or whatever I'm calling the computer, and it goes, morning, Joe. My toast goes in, the coffee starts pouring, they stick on Good Morning Britain because they know I like it.
Oh yes.
Yes.
A man of quality, Joe. Yeah, mate. Good Morning Britain.
You can hear like my rock and roll lifestyle, Jesus.
Yeah.
That is incredible though, mate. Like that is actually amazing.
Well, there's a bit of tech coming from Nvidia, and I'm not allowed to say what it is yet, but in the next few months there'll be a device which means that it will be much easier. Oh, I've forgot to say it without spoiling it or getting in trouble. Yeah. It will be much easier for you to have conversations anywhere in your house, and the modular capacity, as in the capacity for this program to know where you are in your house when it responds, means it will respond to you in that area of the house. So if I'm in my bathroom and I want the lights off, the lights are on in the bathroom, or if I'm in my kitchen and I want to hear a certain song, the music's only going to play in that part of the house. Oh, that's some cool stuff that's going to be out there.
That's fantastic, because at the moment I think we're at the stage where none of this stuff for consumer, at the consumer level anyway, quite works.
Yeah.
E.g. Siri doesn't work. it literally doesn't work. I'm sure you've seen the episode of The Big Bang Theory where Raj is trying to talk to it, I think, and it doesn't understand his accent.
You know, I haven't. My dad's Nigerian, though.
Yeah.
And okay. I love watching him trying to talk to Siri. It's absolutely hilarious. But yeah, Siri has a lot of work to do with regards to understanding Scottish people, Liverpudlians, and also Nigerians, I believe, as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Asian accents as well, I believe, of all types.
Basically, if you speak like a newsreader, you're absolutely fine with Siri.
Yeah. If I put that on, Joe, the 1920s voice.
Well, I loved that guy, mate. He just came out of nowhere. I didn't know you had that character in you. So what do you think, like, that? What's the next big thing in terms of technology? Because I went to a conference recently and I was up there making a video, and they had lots of stuff to do with VR and VR headsets and stuff, and it was a football conference. So one of the things they showed me was that you can... So it was Barcelona Football Club were there. And they showed how they trained their young players using VR. So what they do is they put a VR headset on them, the player's there, and it drops the player into an actual real match, which had been played by the first team. So you're a 17-year-old, you're the first team. You look to your left, you've got Messi, Suarez is in front of you, Iniesta's to your right, and the play starts happening, and then it stops, and it says, what do you do? And it gives you options, and it teaches young players how to make better decisions when under pressure in a football match.
Wow.
And you have correct, like, things like that. I mean, what do you think, like, VR and things like, where are we going with all that stuff?
So, in terms of, to answer your first question, the big thing for 2017, I think one of the big hitters is going to be home automation.
Mm-hmm.
We already covered that, sort of just having things happen for you in your house, a number of things at the same time. But with regards to VR, there's a kind of split crowd at the moment. So there's one crowd that says VR, future. Wow, great. Mm-hmm. Everyone in VR. And then there's the AR, augmented reality, which is where you wear a headset, for example, or Google Glass tried it, where you wear some glasses, and as well as seeing the real world around you, there's added flavors. Now, Google have had their go at it and didn't work very well. I think that the headset cost like £1,000 called Google Glass, got rid of it. But I think AR, if it's approached right, could be great, because VR is amazing, bit of a solo experience, though, and it shuts you off from the world. But in terms of integrating a product into your everyday life, AR could be where it's at. If they found a sexy pair of spectacles that we could wear, for starters, hey, we're accessorizing our faces
now.
Yeah, man. And secondly, like, I don't have to take my phone out of my pocket to know what time it is. Don't have to take my phone out of my pocket to do Google Maps. Maybe don't have to take my phone out of my pocket to select whatever I want to listen to if there's headphones at the end of my glasses. So AR, I believe, is where it's really going to be at with regards to visuals that are taking it a step closer to VR.
And it has practical applications as well. So I was saying to you when you came in here, I was getting annoyed because I've got a conference call to do.
Yeah.
And conference calls are really annoying because you can't quite hear what anyone's saying. I've never met any of these people before, so I don't know who's speaking. Obviously, because I'm unprofessional, I don't know what I'm talking about. So if you have like augmented reality, I could be sat at a desk with 8 spaces around me.
Yeah.
And the other people in the conference call could all be sat there as well. Yeah. And we could all be sat at home wearing the specs and we'd all be there. Has these practical everyday applications.
Exactly, exactly. And other stuff like that. Like I'm shit at remembering names. So do you know what I mean, James? And
that would be wicked name tags, yeah.
Yeah, facial recognition is a thing. So if I walked up somebody I didn't know and it scanned their face, I could go, "Hello, Joe, how you doing? How's your mate? Are you still living in so-and-so? How's the podcast going?"
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of stuff like that.
Well, you know when you're in a nightclub, right? And this happens to me all the time. So like, where you're like, you're talking to...
We're opening Pandora's box now, Joe.
Mate, really
we're going
are.
In. Yeah, go on.
Well, you're talking to a girl, right? And you forget the name.
Yeah.
Because you maybe had a couple of pints. And it's exciting. You're meeting someone, you're chatting. There's loud music. There's maybe a bit of Chris Brown playing in the background.
Okay.
Who knows, right? And then
we're finding out so much about Joe right now. He goes to clubs where there's a lot of Chris Brown playing.
Do you know what it is? It's because I haven't actually been to a nightclub in a while. So it's like, what do young people listen to?
He's backpedaling. He's trying it. Yeah. Joe is in the club. Joe's that new breed of podcaster that not only does history podcasts, he is in the club with bottles upon bottles.
Popping bottles.
Trying to educate the club. Yeah.
But you get these and you say, I'll meet someone.
Yeah.
And what I do is I will save their name as a note on my phone.
Yeah.
But then often, like, I would just type it in and it'll, like, it'll mash up the words. It might do, like, autocorrect.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a good system. And every time they speak to you, you go, "Oh, so what do you think about such and such?" You go, "Well, Julie." What I think is. But now I wouldn't need to do that because I'd have my little headset on.
Have your headset on, you know, tap the name in real quick at some point, like when you're in the bathroom after you first get the name. And that's it. You're set. And also, glasses are an accessory that we're used to people wearing.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's kind of at it at the moment with regards to trying to get glasses involved in tech. Like Snapchat has got Snapchat glasses as well, for want of a better set of words. So you wear the glasses and you can record your Snapchats on them as well. So,
okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook, because they've been pushing this Facebook Live thing where you kind of broadcast live to your followers. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're all wearing glasses soon.
We're nearly out of time. So let
Fuck's sake, Joe.
Let me just quickly zip through some of the other headlines from this week in history.
Am I allowed to react to these, Joe?
Yeah, of course.
In
you
the
can,
background, I won't make too much noise. I'm just going to react naturally.
So on the 16th of January 1919, prohibition was ratified by 3/4 of U.S. states, making alcohol illegal. What they were saying is people are drinking too much.
Yeah.
Okay, it's bad. What they ended up with was the mafia.
Yeah.
Because of that, which is probably worse.
Great films, though.
Mate, best films.
So thank you, the people that put Prohibition in place.
Yeah.
You gave us Scarface.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very
you
much. Thank you. Cheers.
All those squares, you said we shouldn't have a drink, and then we got Goodfellas. So
there we go.
Cheers, guys.
There we go. Cheers. Thank you.
In 1779, Captain James Cook wrote his last notation in his ship's log on the ship Discovery before being eaten by natives.
Ugh.
Bad times. This is my favourite this week. In 1997, the NBA suspended Dennis Rodman indefinitely for kicking a cameraman in the bollocks.
What a legend.
What a hero.
What a way to go.
I watched the YouTube video as well. What happens is Dennis Rodman stumbles off the court, as footballers do, like whatever, when the ball goes out of play. Dennis Rodman runs off the court. There's a cameraman there taking, like, filming. And because he steps on this cameraman, which annoys Dennis Rodman, because the cameraman's in the way of his giant shoe, so he just kicks him in the bollocks.
Is it like a full-on, like, swings and... It's not like a tap. Is it a proper kick in the nuts?
The guy sat on a floor with his legs open, a bit like you do at assembly when you're a child.
Yeah.
He kicks him in the nuts. It's unbelievable.
Do you know what? I have to say, Dennis Rodman, that's a good way to finish a game. Only beaten by Zidane's last game of his career.
The headbutt, yeah.
With a headbutt. I respect you for that, man. When you leave, you've got to leave big sometimes.
Well, the day I retire, I might just be like, thanks, guys. Thank you so much. Oh, thanks for the watch. And then just turn around and just kick someone in the balls.
Boom. Yeah. Headbutt.
I'm
headbutt
out.
To the chest. Yeah, standard.
Exactly. On the 18th in 1671, British pirate Henry Morgan captured Panama City from the Spanish. But Henry Morgan is the man that Captain Morgan's rum's named after. That's him. He's the guy in the bottle.
So how did it... Oh, okay, cool. So why did they get rid of the Henry? Why just captain? Is it because he was a good old cap?
Because he's a captain. Yeah.
Okay, I wouldn't mind Captain Henry Morgan.
Well, Henry Morgan's spiced rum is a bit more... It sounds a bit more classy, doesn't it?
Yeah. So is that the same rum that he used to drink then? Or is it named after him?
I think it's just named after him because he's a famous pirate and swashbuckler and all-round good egg.
Can I ask you another question,
yeah,
Joe?
Mate.
Sorry, I know that I should be shutting up and letting you talk about these dates. Is Drake our best UK pirate? Was he our best pirate from the UK, Drake?
yeah.
Was he like, if we were like to name our best top three pirates, would he be in the top three?
Yeah, I did an episode about Francis Drake a couple of weeks ago, and I had my friend Nicole, who's a presenter on Arsenal TV, in, and she learned something because she just thought Drake was a Canadian rapper. So that was news to her. so Francis Drake, he was a state-sponsored pirate. Elizabeth I said to Drake, what you need to do in order to make more money for the British is you need to go out and ransack and steal Spanish ships, because Spanish ships were coming back from South America full of gold that they'd stolen from the Incas. And Drake was given the green light to steal these. But a bit like Mission Impossible, she said, if you're captured, I will deny all knowledge of your mission.
Wow.
So he was a state-sponsored pirate.
Wow. What a ballsy move.
Hero.
Lizzie was a straight G. That is great. And what episode is that, please? So
that is the 16th of December with Nicole Holliday.
Excellent. Yeah. Check that out. It's honestly, it's wicked.
Go back and listen to it.
Good old Drake. Colonising pirate ships.
Something slightly concerning. Oxfam published a report this week last year saying that the world's 62 richest people are now as wealthy as half of the world's population combined, which is scary. On the 19th, Muhammad Ali talked a man down from a tower who was about to jump and commit suicide. I was unaware of this. I watched the video this week. There's a guy standing on a tower in LA, about to jump out the window and kill himself. Muhammad Ali is passing, so goes up, leans out of a window on like the 14th story, and he's like, listen, I'm your brother. Come down. I want to help you. And talks him down from killing himself.
He's a real-life hero, isn't he?
He's an actual real-life hero. Finally, this week... Come on, brain. 8 years ago, Barack Obama was inaugurated as the 44th president of the United States of America, the first African-American president, and it was a period of quite a lot of hope.
So what are we going to call this time in 100 years then, Joe? What do you think?
Here's the interesting thing about now, right? I, like everybody else, I worry because the world is full of terrorism and racism and prejudice and people are frightened of each other and there's rhetoric coming from right-wing politicians saying these people need to get out, these people are doing this and that, Donald Trump wants to build a fucking wall to keep Mexicans out. I mean, just madness like that. But there's a part of me that thinks this is actual history happening. The one thing I would say as a warning to history is in 1933, Hitler was legally and democratically elected in Germany. He didn't take power, he was elected in the same way that Donald Trump was. Hitler up until 1933 was a right-wing politician and certainly would be considered a racist. At no stage had he talked about going to war and costing the lives of 55 million people. At no stage had he said he was going to create death camps and exterminate certain types of people. He was just a right-wing politician who believed in strong government and wanted to make Germany great again. And Donald Trump's campaign slogan was, let's make America great again. The kind of rhetoric and the kind of things they're saying aren't a million miles apart. And while I certainly don't think we'll end up with a Holocaust under Donald Trump, I think there's certainly a warning from history about electing these kind of firebrands.
Food for thought.
Mate.
And thank you very much. And that was Joe guesting.
You were giving me sort of a, you had like your head cradled in your hand.
Yeah.
And you were like really like nodding like we were on question time.
Yeah, Joe, I love it, man. I'm a big fan of the podcast. So thank you for having me down here today, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for letting me bang on about one of my podcasts, man.
Do go and download How to Kill an Hour. It's right at the top of the tech charts on iTunes, so you can't miss it.
Hey.
Marcus Meets as well.
Yes, that's just... It's a podcast where I sit down and talk to interesting people, celebrities, killers,
Yeah, yeah, killers.
Actual people that save lives as well. Bad people, people that have done bad things, people that have done good things. A couple of mates and even some enemies on the show as well are going to be coming out. Yes, people that are genuine enemies of mine are going to be on the show very shortly. But yeah, it's a good old chin wag and a little bit of information about the people that I talked to as well. I interviewed Batman recently, a real life Batman. And also,
is this one of these guys who dresses up as a superhero and fights crime?
He is a world record breaking superhero. That's all I'm going to say. And whoa. Also, I speak to a hostage negotiator, Richard Mullinder, who's got some great stories. He's like worked in Afghanistan and other parts of the world. And also speak to a SAS Special Forces operative who cannot be named. So we have to hide his identity in it. And we get to hear a little bit about operations that never happened.
And what
might have gone down within these as well. Yeah, so
that is top flight entertainment as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, it's interesting looking someone in the eye, knowing that they have killed people, and asking them kind of what it's like. It's weird asking someone that. It's weird.
That's a departure from normal humanity. So that is the question.
Yeah.
How do you break off that little bit of yourself and do that? Also, I think like you and I have both spent a healthy chunk of our careers interviewing people off reality shows who we don't give a toss about and who have nothing interesting to contribute to the sum of human knowledge.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, mate, is exactly what people should be doing. It sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, man, it's full of passionate people, man. And we should get Joe on it as well.
Get me on it, yeah.
100%.
I like the way that you have enemies as well.
Yeah.
Like Darth Vader.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, it's one thing trying to get an interview with somebody that you like, let alone somebody that don't like you. So it's good.
Really?
Yeah. I just figured it's a little bit different, isn't it? Like, you know.
I'm trying to think. I don't have any enemies, apart from Simon Pegg.
Really? Are we allowed to discuss this?
I'm an enemy. He's my enemy, but he doesn't know who I am. Simon Pegg was a hero of mine. I used to watch Spaced when it was first on Channel 4 when I was about 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah.
I loved Spaced so much and I've been a fan of his for so long that I had Spaced on VHS. I used to watch Spaced on my VHS and sit and rewind it. Loved it. I saw him in HMV in Richmond when I was about 14. Only one series of Spaced had been on. It was 11:30 on Channel 4 on like a Tuesday night or whatever. He was not a famous man. I went up to him and I went, oh my God, I love Spaced so much. Can I please have an autograph? And he said no and told me to piss off. And then I interviewed him several years later, 10 years later, as a broadcaster. I can't remember, I was doing it for TV or something. Interviewed him and Nick Frost, who I really liked as well.
Yeah.
I asked him, I said, obviously you've made Shaun of the Dead. You made Hot Fuzz. I understand that you'll get, this is before The World's End came out. You're going back to make another film with director Edgar Wright, who directed Spaced, which I loved. What can we expect from the third film? At which point Simon Pegg tutted and rolled his eyes and Nick Frost looked at me and went, why are you so obsessed with what we're doing next with Edgar Wright? And I was like, well, it's my job. I'm here to... He said, why do you want to know about that? So, because that's what the audience are interested in.
Wow. And was the interview for that?
It was for a charity event.
Okay, right.
And obviously, you know what it's like. Yeah. I got told before I left the office, ask him about the third film. That's what's going to be clickbait. That's what's going to get people to watch. Then I saw Simon Pegg a couple of weeks later at the exhibition of David Bowie's costumes at the Royal Albert Hall. The V&A Museum, sorry. And I interviewed him and I was talking to him about Star Trek. At no stage did he look me in the eye. He just kind of looked around, looked at other people, said hello to his friends while he was talking to me. And when I finally got an answer out of him, it's the most pretentious thing I ever heard. I said, obviously, you're a Star Trek fan. The Trekkie inside you must have been so excited to work on this with J.J. Abrams, who's a massive Star Trek fan too. And he said, well, the thing about J.J. and myself is we're both auteurs and we like to create things that are true. And I was just looking at you. I just thought, you absolute... bleep machines going in there.
You know what, we should get an episode, we should just have a Marcus Meet special with Joe versus Peg. And maybe if you sat in a room and you had a talk and there was no pressure for anything else and you could just talk to him as Joe, you never know, it might be buddies for life.
But it's all gone one way. So I would just say to him, what's going on? I'm working so hard on our relationship.
Wow.
And I'm getting nothing back.
But if anything, that should make you want to try a bit harder and be successful, Joe, and just get that relationship at the end of the day. You know what I mean? It's all about the chase. Maybe he's playing hard to get.
He's treating me mean, keeping me keen, because I'm desperate for a bit of Peg now, right? I don't care what it takes.
You heard it. Joe's desperate for a pegging. There you go.
Very quickly, before I let you go.
Cool.
I do an idiom every week, so a little piece of language which is snuck into everyday speech
right.
and its origins.
Right.
So freelance.
Okay. Ooh.
You and I are both self-employed.
We are indeed.
Or freelance.
Yes.
Would you like to know where the phrase freelance comes from?
I would like to, yes.
In the 12th and 13th century, noble knights rode around England and France and other parts of Europe.
Right.
Going to different courts and different tournaments and hiring themselves out as the champions, the gladiators, the sportsmen of their day. And say, for example, I was a duke, I might hire a particularly talented knight to fight in my tournament. So those people who rode around doing that were known as freelance because they were free from any particular bond of people they worked with and they carried a lance. So you and I, in many ways, are modern knights.
Wow. Just as chivalrous as well.
Yep.
Might I add as well.
I was talking about my knob earlier, so yeah.
I mean, I roll around with my lance all the time.
Absolutely.
Prepared,
mate.
Fully prepared. Yeah, I've got my lance ready to go at a moment's notice.
Let's not joust though, because it could get messy in the
studio. Let's not joust. Listen, I've had a bit of a dry month this month. You don't want to joust with me. There'll be ectoplasm everywhere.
Oh,
who said that?
Who said that?
Do you know what, Joe? I learned a word today.
Yeah.
I'm dyslexic. I had to read. I have to read over things more than once or twice, and I'm not the best with words. If you were to go through this podcast, there'd probably be a few things that I said where I probably use the wrong word. I found out a new word today. Thermoclept.
Right.
Is a stealer of heat. So yeah. If you're in a relationship with somebody and they put their feet on you and give you the freezing toes halfway through your night of sleep and you wake up, they're a thermoclept, they're a stealer of heat. Or somebody who will just always hog the radiator. That's one word that I know, Joe.
Or when, like, and this happens a lot when you're in bed with someone, they take all the duvet.
Thank you, Joe, for saying that's something that happens a lot with me.
Yeah,
I appreciate that every day.
When I'm in bed with you, Marcus,
what
happens all the time.
When we're not jousting. Yeah.
After we finish, we're tired. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
But like, they take the duvet, they're thermoclepting me.
Yes, they're thermocleptors.
Bastards.
Thermoclept. Sounds like a disrespectful word as well. You thermoclept.
It sounds like something you'd have to take pills for.
Thermoclepsia.
Mate, I can't come out this weekend. I got thermoclept. Yeah. I knew I should have never gone to Prague.
Wicked. Am I allowed to do one more plug, Joe?
Mate, of course you can.
HowToKillAnHour.com
Yes.
is the one podcast, and MarcusBronzy.com/meets is the other one.
Cool.
That's BRONZY for the Bronzy. But yeah, thank you, Joe. I'm going to stop battering on now at you.
No, mate, thank you so much for coming in. It's been so interesting talking to you.
When can I come back?
You can come back whenever you like, mate.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, that guy. Bring that guy as well. I like him. 1920s reporter.
Jeez.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Very Old News. Please do get in touch. Thank you to my guest, Marcus Bronzy. And I will see you next week. You and me.